Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Today on the program, we're going to talk with Deacon John Devlin, who, along with a few other folks, made a visit to the border recently, their ministry experience and what he learned there in the interview. I hope you will stick around for it. Renee Krantz from the Bishop's Bulletin will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings, though, for this Sunday. Michelle Sletten with the first and second reading and Deacon Roger Height with the gospel.
A reading from the book of Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanities, says Koheleth. Vanity of vanities. All things are vanity. Here is one who has labored with wisdom and knowledge and skill, and yet to another who has not labored over it, he must leave property. This also is vanity and a great misfortune. For what profit comes to man from all the toil and anxiety of heart with which he has labored under the sun? All his days, sorrow and grief are his occupation. Even at night, his mind is not at rest. This also is vanity. The word of the Lord. A reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Colossians. Brothers and sisters, if you were raised with Christ, seek what is above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Think of what is above, not of what is on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ your life appears, then you too will appear with him in glory. Put to death then the parts of you that are earthly: immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and the greed that is idolatry. Stop lying to one another, since you have taken off the old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed for knowledge in the image of its Creator. Here there is not Greek and Jew, circumcision and uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Christ is all and in all. The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me." He replied to him, "Friend, who appointed me as your judge and arbitrator?" Then he said to the crowd, "Take care to guard against all greed, for though one may be rich, one's life does not consist of possessions." Then he told them a parable. There was a rich man whose land produced a bountiful harvest. He asked himself, "What shall I do, for I do not have space to store my harvest?" And he said, "This is what I shall do. I shall tear down my barns and build larger ones. There I shall store all my grain and other goods, and I shall say to myself, 'Now as for you, you have so many good things stored up for many years. Rest, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this night your life will be demanded of you, and the things you have prepared, to whom will they belong? Thus will it be for all who store up treasure for themselves, but are not rich in what matters to God.'" The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Renee Krantz.
All right, a little local news first. Children and their families learn to cope with grief associated with losing a loved one during their time at Camp Sydney in June. Offered at Broomtree Retreat and Conference Center by Catholic Family Services, 18 campers and 14 parents from 13 families spent 3 days working together. They worked with 23 volunteers, learning ways to deal with their grief and making sure kids understand it's okay to talk about the person they lost. Camp volunteers added fun activities like woodworking, slip and slide, s'mores, a scavenger hunt, swimming, and group games. A balloon release and an evening memorial luminary on the water topped off the events. A worldwide network of 2,000 Catholic religious sisters marked the 10th anniversary of its efforts to combat human trafficking and slavery July 29th. Speakers from the Talitha Kum organization headlined a United Nations panel on the eve of the UN annual observance of the World Day Against Trafficking in Persons. Father David Charters said the international response to the global phenomenon includes three specific targets in the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. They commit the organization's members to fight trafficking and sexual exploitation, take immediate action to eradicate forced labor and modern slavery and human trafficking, and end all forms of violence against and torture of children. A guidebook for business leaders that was developed largely by Minnesota Catholics and released as an official Vatican document in 2012 made a splash around the world but has remained largely unknown in the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis. 7 years later, its proponents say it is more relevant than ever, and one of its developers plans to start spreading the word about it with a class this fall at his parish. A small team at the University of St. Thomas's Center for Catholic Studies in St. Paul took the lead in developing the groundbreaking 30-page reflection titled Vocation of the Business Leader. It marked the first time that the Catholic Church affirmed business as a vocation, citing its role in providing for the common good and promoting human dignity, a stark contrast to the mercenary nature of business often implied by theologians. The introduction lays out a central premise. Obstacles to serving the common good come in many forms: corruption, absence of rule of law, tendencies toward greed, poor stewardship of resources. But the most significant for a business leader on a personal level is leading a divided life. This split between faith and daily business practice can lead to imbalances and misplaced devotion to worldly success. With all the news a Catholic can use, I'm Renee Kranz with the Bishop's Bulletin.
That's a really timely last piece there, Renee, with the Faith and Business Conference coming up this week.
Yeah.
We'll
yeah.
give people a little more detail about that at the end of our show this morning. Let's move on now to our interview. This morning at Kathy Views, we are joined by Deacon John Devlin. Deacon John, of course, runs the Deacon Formation Program. We might touch on a little bit of that as we talk this morning, but our primary conversation this morning is about a visit to the border, Deacon John, that you were involved with from St. Michael's. Some folks from St. Michael's Parish here in Sioux Falls made a border visit. This is such a... I don't know what the right word is, but almost a hot topic among people because a lot of us, I don't think, quite understand what's going on, why there's so much trouble, why are all these people seemingly crossing our border illegally, is the perception. So there's a lot there, and I thought maybe because you were actually on the ground visiting the place, you might have something valuable to share with us.
Yes, Jerry, seven of us from St. Michael's went down to a Catholic ministry in El Paso, Texas, known as Annunciation House.
Okay.
It's a 41-year-old ministry that was started by four young men who had just graduated from college and wanted to do something to live the gospel more fully. They were doing a Bible study and they came to Matthew 25, those famous verses of I was hungry and you fed me and all those things. And they got to I was a stranger and you welcomed me. And they could not get by that verse,
wow,
given the fact that they lived in El Paso and could see what was going on even 41 years ago.
I was going to say, 41 years ago.
Yes.
It's not a new issue.
And so they began this house that would welcome any person who was in need of shelter and holds about 60 people, called Annunciation House. That was their original plan, was to run just that. Well, then things got a little busier, so they have another house called Casa Vitas, which is a house that holds about 25 people. They usually have women and children in that house. Then things got a little bit busier.
Oh,
and
my.
So then they took over a building that had been abandoned by an abuse shelter sort of a place,
mm-hmm,
that holds 200 people. And then they got a little bit busier, so
oh,
they rented a warehouse and turned it into a shelter with, it did a beautiful job given the circumstances and what they had to work with, that holds 500 people. And then they have 33 churches in El Paso who will receive immigrants from them, and they fill these two hotels that they work with every single day.
Wow.
So it's just an incredible Catholic ministry living the gospel of that Jesus preached in El Paso, Texas.
So they accept volunteers to come down and help them with the work that goes with this.
Yes, they do. And they're tough. They have some tough requirements for their volunteers. Of course, you have to be able to speak Spanish, which puts me on the outside of that.
We're on the edge of that.
Very much on the edge. Yes, yes. On that, I very few words. Poco español.
Yeah, poco y poco. Yeah,
and
bit by bit.
So the then the volunteers that they do have, and the whole thing is run by volunteers.
Okay.
They have a bookkeeper who is paid, and a lawyer who gets some stipends, but otherwise everyone's a volunteer.
And these four guys that started this, mm-hmm. still involved?
Yeah. Two have passed away.
Wow.
One is still on the board, and one, a man named Ruben Garcia, is running the whole thing. We had a conversation with him one day down there, our group, with another group of people who did. What an incredible man, just what he is doing.
Yeah.
As we were sitting there, he received a text message from ICE, you know, the Immigration Control and Enforcement, and it said they wanted to release 225 people to him right then. And he said, well, I'll tell you how this works. He says, I'm going to text him back just for fun. I'm going to tell him that, can you wait an hour? And so he texted him back and said, can you wait 1 hour? And they said, no, you take him now or we release him to the street.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, of course, he took them all.
Wow.
And found places for all of them. But that's, I think, a big misperception that I've had and that maybe many others have, is that most of the people immigrating today, crossing our border today, are doing so through the ports of entry.
Right. So it's so legally.
Right. Legally.
Right.
As asylum seekers mm-hmm. from Central American countries, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, some Nicaraguan. And then I was surprised that there was a good number of Cuban people there as well.
They've gone to Mexico.
No, they can't get into Mexico from Cuba because of immigration restrictions and all of that.
But they're somehow finding their way.
So they go to Colombia, South America, and then come back up through Panama and all the way up through that.
So I think that's a really important moment for people to really spend some time thinking about. What is going on in these countries that is driving people? I mean, just imagine yourself if you're in a situation where it is so bad mm-hmm. that you feel compelled to travel a long distance and probably without means to do so mm-hmm. in order to get to a better life.
Yes, and that's why most of them come. They're in a place where either because of grinding extreme poverty or especially more so in certain parts of Guatemala, in Honduras, in El Salvador, just gang violence is driving the whole immigration issue. And basically, gang, especially in Honduras, are almost running the entire country. So people, to protect their children, what would it take for one of us, like you just asked, to say to you'd be so afraid for your children that you would send your 12-year-old daughter and son off on a 2,400-mile journey mm-hmm. to El Paso, Texas.
Yeah.
Things would have to be dire.
Yeah. And you know, we just don't think that those kind of conditions exist in our world mm-hmm. today, but they do.
They do, yes. I've been in Guatemala a few times, going again this weekend. We're heading off again. And if I was there, I always think to myself, if I was living in this place, in this village, in this,
the
first thing I would be thinking about is how do I get somewhere where I can really live a life that's beyond just pounding out survival, but some means to thrive as a human being.
Yeah, absolutely.
In dignity.
So, what would you say of the seven of you, the reaction that you experienced as you dealt with some of these things?
Well, mostly that whole issue of the immigration issue, as you're there, takes on such a beautiful human face.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just illegals. It's people coming here seeking some sort of welcome, so that they can get to a place in their life where they're not persecuted, harassed, and living in this horrible poverty. And I think that knowing that, I thought, wow, we really do have a duty in some way, and in good ways in this country, to welcome and assist them.
I know the Diocese of El Paso, particularly Bishop Seitz, I think, is their bishop. He's been very active in all of this. And part of what I hear him trying to do is, in a sense, to depoliticize. Mm-hmm. This whole issue has become such a political football. Mm-hmm. And aren't, in a sense, then, aren't people being used for one purpose or another, no matter which side of the issue you might fall on? And we just can't use people in that way, or we shouldn't.
You're right. It is a unfortunate political situation right now, where one side takes a very hard stance, the other side uses that opportunity to take the opposite stance, and it just turns into a big stalemate with human beings caught
right
in the middle. We had the chance, one of the better meetings I think we had was with the Border Patrol when we were there. We had different experiences while we were there, but the Border Patrol was... A little presentation was put on by two of their community services people who were both agents and who had spent much time in the field as well. But one of our people, when it came to the question and answer period, asked, okay, so what do you really need to do your job better? Good question. And they said, we need more agents and we need better technology. And that's where it ended. And so the guy followed up with a question.
Well,
you left something out. We keep hearing that we need this wall.
Yeah.
And the man didn't want to directly
of course not.
Talk about it, but he said, we just need those two things I mentioned.
Yeah.
And so this guy kept pressing and said, what about the wall? And finally, this guy said, well, basically said something, I'm not going to quote him exactly, but basically said, the wall is politics. We live in the real world, and we know what we need. But the problem right now is really for any law enforcement agency, even in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and anywhere in the United States, including the Border Patrol, it's difficult to hire people. For some reason, those law enforcement jobs are very difficult to fill, where at one time it was fairly easy to fill them.
Well, and again, and not to dwell on this, but don't you think the whole politicization of it, I mean, who wants to be involved in this kind of work?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's what the man said. They hire lots of people who quit very rapidly. Yeah. They don't stick with it very long at all because of all of what they run into.
So walk us through, again, the shelter is there to they receive these people, because obviously when they get here, they probably have little or nothing left. What happens then?
Okay. Just say you were a person from Honduras. You were coming over a port of entry into El Paso, Texas, or probably into other places along the border as well. What happens today is that the immigration, who runs the borders, stops you about 2 feet from the border. And if you're an asylum seeker, they put a wristband on you and send you back into Mexico, into Juarez, into a shelter there, that a detention center that isn't very safe. We heard from person after person of the horrible conditions that are there. And so then you have to wait until your number is called, the number on your wristband, which takes about 3 to 4 weeks. And then you are allowed to come in. And when you enter the United States, you are placed in a detention center here for, depending on your situation, if you have a sponsor in the United States and you have what at least on the face looks like a credible claim for asylum, then ICE will release you to Annunciation House, and they will assist you in getting a hold of your sponsor and getting you moving, you know, because they have to move people too because of the numbers that come. So they get you as quickly as possible to that place where your sponsor is. If you don't have a sponsor in the United States, you have to stay in the detention center until your case is heard in immigration court.
And did you see some of this where the families are being split up? Was that part of what you saw?
Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, we heard that from many. There was a woman in the house that we stayed in who was just sitting there, nervous as can be, pacing because she was waiting for her husband. They had been split up at the border. They were seeking asylum. They were from Cuba, seeking asylum, and she was just frantic. But in the time that we were there, he never showed up. So we're not sure how that all ended.
So, and you can understand, again, just taking the politics out of this, you certainly understand why our government wants to check who's coming in. They want to verify the stories. They want to make sure they're not letting somebody in who has some kind of a crazy past.
Right. Yeah. In fact, I think that's a key thing to know, especially as Catholics, is what does our church teach about immigration? Most people, I don't think, know about it. If you listen to conversations and read what people post on social media, it doesn't seem like a lot of people know. But
well, why don't you tell
the
us?
The first principle of that our church, and this is all from the USCCB Justice an immigration website, but there's a part of it that gives the five things that the church, our church teaches. And the first is that a person has the right to not immigrate. A person has the right to thrive in the place where they are, to live a life of human dignity, being able to feed their family and to have clean water and access to food and medical care, you know, just those very, very basic things. If they don't have those conditions, then they have the right to immigrate to another country,
wherever that might be. Wherever that might be.
And especially if they're persecuted for some reason or if they're fleeing violence. The third is that sovereign countries, like the United States, have the right to have some sort of knowledge about who's coming and through our border, and we certainly do need to know that. Like you said, we don't need to let the Hondurans empty out their jails or something and send them our way. We want to make sure that we're getting the people who are truly fit the tenets of what a asylum seeker or refugee really is. And then after that, it's those people deserve to be afforded protection. That's basically international law. Those treaties that have been in place for many, many years allow those people to have protection. And then the fifth one is the human rights and dignity of even undocumented persons are to be respected, protected, preserved. Because in Catholic social teaching, there's that tenet of solidarity. Right. We're all one people.
Yeah.
We're all God's children.
And again, I think just a reference to Matthew 25 is really critical for all of us. This is the gospel, folks, that we're talking about here, and certainly what the Catholic social teaching is based off of. There's no easy solutions here, are there, Deacon John?
There is not a wall. There is not a thing. There is nothing that going to just easily solve this issue.
Frankly, it's like so many other issues. You almost have to go to the source of the problem, which is these countries where there's such unrest and such troubles. And I don't know that we're going to have a lot of impact on that.
From St. Michael's, that's why we're going to Guatemala this weekend. We're trying to assist this village in getting clean water and some more opportunities for jobs, for ways to support themselves, and for better access to education.
Yeah, and that's where it starts. If any of us, if we're in somewhat of a stable situation wherever we live, we're likely to stay.
You're right.
Yeah, and so we certainly hope for all of them. It's an ongoing issue. I appreciate you sharing it with us. And again, no easy solutions, but a lot of things to pray for in all
you
of this.
You aren't kidding.
Yeah.
Yes.
A couple minutes left, Deacon John. I do want to give you a chance to talk about the Deacon program, because I know you are in this process now of kind of searching.
Right.
You're looking.
We are, indeed. We are looking for men who feel that call to serve the church in an ordained ministry like the diaconate, men who are at least 35 years old, who seem to be feeling that pull from God. I would encourage you to, first of all, talk to your pastor, to go to your pastor and see what, bounce it off somebody, see what he says, maybe to your wife as well, or some of your friends, and just see what might come of those conversations. then if it seems like it's going somewhere, get a hold of me at the diocesan, the chancery office in Sioux Falls, and we will discuss things. And if it seems right for you, start the application process. And just to remember that you're not really committing to the whole thing up front, that you're committing maybe to, well, I'm going to go through the first year, which is called aspirancy, and see where that takes me. And then maybe things will work out. Maybe they won't.
We don't maybe think about this one as much. We think about marriage. We think about, you know, priesthood. We think about some of the other vocations. And we don't have time to get into all of that this morning. That's a whole nother conversation you and I can have. But if there's a bit of a tug, if there's something that, you know, you think the Lord's nudging you in some direction, it's worth exploring.
Oh, most certainly. And I would just encourage people to just take that time to pray, you know, God, where do you want me to serve?
Yeah.
How do you want me to serve? You'll be surprised if you're sincere with that prayer and sincere with some silence after it. You might be surprised what you find out from God.
You open a door, you don't know which where it's going to take you,
right? That's right.
All right. Well, we encourage people to do that. Again, contact your parish, your pastor first, start there, and then Deacon John here to help you if you need it. Always a fount of knowledge, John. It's fun to talk to you about both the border stuff and the diaconate stuff. Yeah. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
So appreciative of Deacon John Devlin sharing the insights that he acquired during their visit to the border. And Renee, I want to go back to the story that you ended with this morning about faith and business, and the timing of that's perfect because this week is the Faith and Business Conference. I really want to encourage people to attend that if they can.
Yeah, it sounds like a great event.
Thursday, it's at the Ramcota. You can still get tickets, I believe. In fact, I think you can get tickets the morning of. Tom Morgan is one of the speakers. Father Jim Mason, certainly well known in our diocese, is also one of the speakers. It'll be a great day. It always is. And they do a good job, and their whole goal is to help people take Sunday into Monday and then throughout the week, which is, you know, something we can all use.
Yes, but definitely.
Regardless of whatever business you are in. So check that out, Faith and Business Conference this Thursday. And we should maybe give people a little bit of a tease, a heads up, that if they haven't thought about the Holy Day coming up, that that's, you know, something to get on the calendar.
Yes, don't forget.
It's the Feast of the Assumption on August 15th, and that's always, we say, it's an opportunity, not an obligation.
Right, yes.
All right. Well, that's our time for Catholic Views this morning. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back next Sunday.